Don't you go anywhere, we're live. Not expect to be here tonight. I pretty well let it be known I'd be out for a couple days. I have yet to accomplish one damn thing that I needed to accomplish for one reason or another. But we're here, Friday night. Why do we open with this piece of music? A couple pieces of health-related news, although it's less health-related than it is news as relates to the health issues in this country, and it's compounding more each and every day. I have never read or seen or heard so much complete and total BS in my life. And just shortly before going on the air, I saw more headlines that are not related to health, but I could spend 3 hours here tonight, but no thanks. First up, and this says so much. The media has categorized those of us who refuse to get injected for the Wuhan coronavirus as anti-vaxxers who spread misinformation in defiance of medical establishment guidelines. But the truth, though, is that those perhaps most opposed to the vaccines are doctors and nurses who work with pharmaceuticals each and every day. Nearly half of all healthcare workers are saying no to the Chinese jab. 52% of those who work in medicine have had at least one Wuhan flu shot, while the other 48% ain't planning to participate. One in six healthcare workers are even planning to quit their jobs if their employers tell them that they have to be injected in order to continue working. And yet we've covered in depth on several different occasions the fact that legally they cannot do that. About 36% of healthcare workers say they question the safety and effectiveness of chemicals that were fast-tracked into production, followed by emergency authorization. None of the jabs, not one as of today, have received the official approval because all of them are still in clinical trials. Oh, so you see, those of you who have gone out and gotten stuck, you're just a clinical guinea pig. Well, this is a survey that was recently conducted by the Washington Post and the Kaiser Family Foundation, the largest and most comprehensive survey of its type. It covered 1,327 staff working in hospitals, assisted living facilities, patient homes, and other similar type settings. I mean, why risk dying from a vaccine when the virus it supposedly fights is barely even a threat? Now, that may come as a surprise to some of you, but the fact of the matter is I've read study after study after study. And in the overall scheme of things, coronavirus is on the lowest end of the spectrum. There's been similar research conducted by multiple major institutions, including Brown University and Harvard University, found that nearly 40% of all skilled nursing staff passed up getting jabbed for the Wuhan the first time around. And the reasons for saying no all make perfect sense. For one, the so-called vaccine was developed way too early. It's also only received emergency use authorization from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration as opposed to official approval, which means that there's no way to truly know if it's safe or effective. Many healthcare workers have also expressed concerns about being unfamiliar with the ingredients used in the vaccine. One of them is polyethylene glycol, or PEG, a chemical preservative that is known to be both toxic and anaphylactic. As news reports continue to spread about vaccinated people falling ill or kicking the bucket, many healthcare workers have also indicated they cannot afford to risk getting sick and missing work. Many also have families and cannot afford to die over a virus that has a 99.9% plus survival rate. And female nurses and doctors are also concerned about becoming infertile from the jabs, which have also been known to trigger spontaneous miscarriages and abortions. You doubt me? Go to drkelly.info and start reading. We've posted many articles of this type lately. But finally, there's widespread concern among workers across many different sectors that the long-term effect of Wuhan coronavirus injections are unknown. And it could take months or even years to see the true impact, and by then it'll already be too late. Reasons for vaccine refusal include mistrust of the government and pharmaceutical companies, concerns about side effects made worse by rampant misinformation about the vaccine on social media, and concerns among black healthcare workers which stem from a history of medical racism. And as it turns out, healthcare workers in many other countries feel much the same way. The highest vaccine acceptance rate among healthcare workers anywhere in the world was in Israel. 78.1% say they would take the jab. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, on the other hand, only 27.7% of doctors say that they would take it. And by comparison, vaccine acceptance figures from surveys of the general public range between 70 and 79%, significantly higher than healthcare workers. That's quite interesting. Well, I ain't taking it. I don't really care. I've read too much. I've studied too much. And here's an interesting reason for some of this. Pfizer is now targeting preteen and young teenage girls ages 12 to 15. Now, think about this. It was just a couple of days ago. They've now come out and said that they are ready to begin inoculating kids as young as 10 years of age right now. But what's the reason for all of this? Population reduction and sterilization experiment known as mRNA. Oh, our boy Billy Bob Gates. Number one goal is to reduce the population of planet Earth by a few billion people. And he said he could accomplish this if he does a really good job with vaccines and healthcare. Meaning dirty vaccines and Planned Parenthood, abortion factories in every metropolitan city. Now, just how do you think vaccines can reduce the population of humans when they're supposed to protect people from disease? Well, here's how. Pfizer's already running experimental trials with their COVID vaccine on children, claiming 100% efficacy. Except that most children don't catch COVID in the first place, and nary a child dies from it. So why all the fuss in the trial research? Plus, who's verifying that these crooked, corrupt pharmaceutical companies that manufacture the vaccines even have valid tests and reported data? Nobody. That's who. You remember the fraud some years ago from Merck regarding the efficacy of mumps vaccines when they spiked testing with animal antibodies to obtain an accuracy lie? Oh, yeah, my friends, Big Pharma lies all the time, big time, about their vaccines, their safety, their efficacy. Oh, these hucksters and snake oil salesmen run their own fake tests and fake research and then fake the results to obtain whatever data the CDC requires for high-end profits made off of naive, brainwashed and now terrified Americans. I mean, take Merck, for example. Former employees blew the whistle on a massive scheme they concocted to mislead and defraud government health authorities. Merck vaccine scientists use animal antibodies to spike blood samples and then rip off governments worldwide by claiming a 95% efficacy rate for the mumps component of the MMR vaccine. In other words, Merck's corrupt scientists spike the blood tests with animal antibodies to artificially inflate the appearance of immune system antibodies. And their adulterated research got exposed when two Merck scientists filed a false claim act complaint a decade ago. The vaccine, as it turned out, actually promoted mumps and measles outbreaks. All of this fraud, the scientists said, had been going on since the 1990s. Oh, go figure. Do you remember the tetanus vaccines pushed on millions of teenage girls in Kenya? It contained sterilization chemicals and caused miscarriages. Well, now Pfizer wants to vaccinate every young American female who's about to enter or just entered their childbearing years with a vaccine that's already killed over 1,750 Americans and has no proof whatsoever of safety nor efficacy. Could mRNA be a secret anti-fertility biological weapon that causes miscarriages, spontaneous abortions, and infertility? It wouldn't be the first time Bill Gates pushed for vaccinations that contain sterility chemicals. You remember the spike tetanus vaccines given to millions of young women in Kenya? Yeah. Independent laboratories confirmed that the tetanus vaccines contained a sterilization chemical that caused miscarriages. And that was heavily promoted by Bill Gates and UNICEF and the WHO. So that upwards of 3 million young girls would be violated by chemical violence by a dirty cat vaccines. You see, the vaccine literally caused the woman's body to destroy the fetus. Now Pfizer suddenly claims they have a COVID-19 vaccine with a 100% efficacy that would be perfect for shooting up girls entering their childbearing years? Oh my goodness, how convenient. When kids aren't even catching or spreading COVID. And whom else besides Pfizer has verified those findings? Maybe Merck scientists helped them achieve their amazing efficacy rate with some animal antibodies. Maybe we should investigate. We share the urgency to expand the authorization of our vaccine to use in younger populations and are encouraged by the clinical trial data from adolescents between the ages of 12 and 15. Oh, really? Why that age range? Well, Pfizer clowns also claim that the vaccine elicited a robust antibody response in children and that herd immunity might be hard to achieve without children being vaccinated. So what about masks, social distancing, quarantining the healthy people even after vaccination? Is that all helping with herd immunity? Someone please explain. Oh, my friends, make no mistake. Vaccines are manufactured for one reason and one reason only. Depopulating the earth, not populating it. And that's why the industry shells out $4 billion every 20 years for injuries and autism and death caused by inoculation side effects. But $4 billion? Eh, it's chump change, baby. Chump change. Both of these articles that we've opened the program with are posted at drkelly.info. And it is, I think they're both posted number 2 and number 3 in the top. The one I just shared with you about Pfizer targeting American preteen and young teenage girls ages 12 to 15, there is also a secondary link in there It's somewhat of a follow-up written by a different person. Former Pfizer VP says experimental COVID-19 vaccines could be used for massive scale depopulation. Do you begin to get it? And yet every time that I have to go out and pick up some gold or silver from my local supplier to get ready to ship out to some of our listeners, I have to pass by the State Farm place where the Arizona Cardinals pretend like they're playing football. It's appalling. The tents they have set up there to do vaccinations. And the people have to make reservations to get in there. And I've gone by their time seeing hundreds of cars parked. It's appalling. And the more I read, the more sickened I become with all of it. It's unbelievable the crap that people will believe. Other articles we have published, one entitled "For Those Pressured Into Taking the Vaccine." Women recently injected with experimental COVID vaccines are showing symptoms of breast cancer. Yeah, these are some of the things that are up there. COVID-19 vaccines are weapons of mass destruction. COVID prevention, an alternative to vaccines. Gene therapy poison, COVID vaccines, by Dr. Judy Mikovits. And here's one. It's all on the front page. Scroll on down. Ingredients in the vaccine. You start reading some of this stuff, and you're going to be questioning why you took the thing. And, of course, as I've shared with you, coronavirus vaccine deaths are not covered by life insurance because the jabs are an experimental medical intervention. Do you get it, Jack? If you don't, nothing I can do for you. Absolutely nothing I can do for you. A few pieces that we published on Federal Observer today. The top piece says much. It's just entitled Friday, and it's an image, and it's a powerful image. The second piece posted is an article entitled Dreams. It's interesting. Dreams. It opens by saying everybody dreams. Some just don't remember their dreams upon awakening. I fall into that category. Most of the time, I can't remember what I dreamt the night before. And our author, Neil Ross, says, however, I just woke from a dream that was so vivid that it's fresh in my mind. So I decided to write about it before the memory fades. And that's why I'm here right now at 3:47 in the morning, all so you can share in my dreams. I strongly urge you read it. It says much about what we're living through in this nation today, what we're facing. As you know, I had not intended on being here tonight. There's things I needed to commit 4 days off to doing, and I have yet to even get started on either one of them. I'm still going through issues with websites. I've not had a chance to get on with these people in over a week to try to come to some conclusion on some of these things. I also have 2019 and 2020 personal taxes to conclude because I'll be meeting my accountant toward the end of April. There will be a period of time toward the end of April that I will not be around. I will be meeting my two buddies from Vietnam. I will make it clear, however, that I will have to do at least 3 programs during the week. And they can go do what they damn well please. I don't care. So I'll be doing it remotely. I went out last night for a while. I actually went out early. And I got back early, about 10 o'clock. Many nights I don't leave until 10 o'clock. It's just to get me out of here, to allow me to breathe some different air, see some different people, and whatever. I got back at 10 o'clock, and it was something posted in my email. As I began to go through it, I melted. You want to talk about dreams? In many respects, it's a dream of another type. We call it the devil's bargain. And the devil's bargain had seemingly been sealed in the previous decade. And the witch's concoction that passed for a vaccine was seen as a godsend by the bulk of the poorly educated, ignorant masses that had bought the numerous fallacies and the propaganda surrounding the COVID-19 vaccine. Hook, line, and sinker. Despite the significant deaths on all the bodies headed down the conveyor systems and into the furnaces, the government and its prostitutes in the boardrooms of the country's media outlets and all the local newsrooms were touting its success. And the final unbelievably low death rate of only 10% among the vaccinated, although nobody could or was even trying to prove otherwise. Of course, we had the government quack in chambers, Dr. Antonio Fauci, who attributed the deaths to other ailments. And he noted that the deaths were primarily among the elderly. No matter that every single rational-minded individual in every town across the country knew differently, and reason had many noting that too many people of all ages had already seemingly just vanished from the face of the earth. But curiously enough, certain dissidents had become aware of a memo asserted to be the genuine article that was circulated at the highest levels of government that supposedly read, Fauci is still really screwing things up. Every time he opens his fat mouth, he's out of control, acts as if he's running things around here. He contradicts himself every few days. We'll probably need to cancel him before long. Give him an honorary medal, a Nobel, and then be sure he disappears in Lubyanska Psychiatric Hospital. Which new fake virus are we releasing for the next phase, Klaus? The new COVID fantasy isn't selling. We're thinking about a resurgence of Ebola or Zika, or both. We already have a lot of propaganda associated with them, and the hemorrhaging and the bleeding that comes through Ebola already scares the hell out of everybody, so that's really useful, a real winner. Are more lockdowns scheduled for America? Aside from all of this, my friends, regardless of what one knew or thought they knew, the one thing everyone knew for sure that it was dangerous as all hell to speak up or ask any questions these days. Times had changed faster than Brer Rabbit could hop to the next briar patch. The year that Maggie McGuire had turned 15 in 2021. And 10 long years afterwards, here in 2031. Americans of any real age were troubled, sick with fear most days, largely on the brink of poverty on any given day, depending on the path that they had chosen at the turning, the day America's republic faded into the sunset, destroyed by her enemies. But on the bright side, if one was to be had, the pandemic had come to an end, finally defeated, or so they were told. Hooray! Even though the virus was still out there in its natural form, ever changing, ever mutating, the other big lie they'd all been sold. And many wondered in private why the masks and the lockdowns were still being mandated 10 years later, as they seriously doubted that a cloth mask was much of a safety feature or that it would stop a resurgence of any disease. And so nobody objected or said otherwise. At least not when strangers were near, or the federal COVID certificate inspectors who all wore insignia on their uniforms with a sword and shield. The CCI were mockingly known as state boys or Stasi. in association with the old communists of East Germany and the stories that still found their way through the community, despite the constant suppression of all history, other than the approved knowledge from the Ministry of State Security. Maggie often found herself shaking her head at the incredible number of her countrymen she now rejected as foul sheep and traitors to everything good and decent that her parents and grandparents had impressed upon her from birth, as they seemed to not mind so much the turning away from liberty, simply donning their masks each and every day as if it were another piece of clothing. But she knew it as a sign of submission to what her granddad Grover had called the Leviathan, just as she reviled those Americans who blindly followed the regular lockdown orders to stay indoors. The constant hated refrain she always heard from those who saw her as some unclean, unwashed thing was, "Rules are rules," as they warned her that bad things would happen to her and her family if she did not soon fall in line and get with the program. She avoided all government-controlled areas except for the most exceptional cases of any real emergency that required something she couldn't find elsewhere, like real and effective medicines under lock and key and controlled by government-owned doctors, some of whom were secretly sympathetic to the dissenters and rebels, such as herself and her family and all of her close friends. But of late, Maggie had noticed the Stasi were increasingly worried these days. Most Americans had rushed to comply with the Democratic Party Communist mandatory vaccination campaign, but pockets of people had flatly refused to take the vaccine, as they stated that a host of reasons that mostly concerned health and religious reasons. Those who understood the vaccines were being used as a means of control over people had instead chosen to find refuge in the secluded countrysides of America, far off the grid in many cases, abandoning the use of the internet and cell phones and electronics in general so they couldn't be traced by the Stasi goons that they'd grown to hate. And since the turning had forced the economy to go completely cashless, the dissenters had returned to a trade and barter economy, which to date had worked out just fine and resulted in a fairly wonderful, if difficult, lifestyle in many respects. But the government had not seen them as any real threat at first, and they were largely ignored because the Ministry of State Security didn't expect them to manage to survive as well as they had outside the comfort of the state's ever-watchful domain. And the Stasi had initially simply seen them as a bunch of country bumpkin losers and anti-vaxxers who could never possibly make their way through such a harsh lifestyle outside the relative comfort offered by embracing the ministry's welcome blanket. Dissenters were still not plentiful enough to be seen as an existential threat to the ministry's total control of all America and all her resources and wealth. But then you see rumors had begun to fray at the ministry's nerves. And Chairman Joe, never right in his head, was even more unhinged these days as his 90th birthday than he was in 2021. No. When he and the Marxists and Maoists took control of the nation. They were all becoming near apoplectic over discovering that many small communities now had grown somewhat prosperous, even in the face of a harsh lifestyle, within the liberty they'd chosen long ago for themselves and their families. And it angered Chairman Joe right into another stroke, and now the czar of ministry and truth, Cammy Herod, would be damned if she was going to stand by and allow them to continue to dance and smile, enjoy their natural and delicious food or enjoy their lives as the people were actually falling in love and going forth and procreating once again, populating their little niche of God's green earth just as mankind had always done long before Big Brother. Oh yeah, Maggie knew all about Big Brother. Even though the book was banned and many thousands of copies had been burned over the decade, Granddad Grover had told her the story many, many times. And so the persecutions began within a matter of weeks as the Stasi rounded up the unclean anti-vaxxers, or the free-born Americans, as they called themselves, to anyone with ears to hear. Communities everywhere were raided, too often destroyed outright for the crime of objecting to the tyrannical violation of simple common decency after their inalienable God-given rights had already been so sorely abused and abrogated. Anyone the people considered a leader, even in the slightest of manners, was arrested and imprisoned for many days, sometimes weeks. And planting anything not specifically approved by the Ministry of State Security was declared illegal in big, bold red letters and signs that were rapidly erected. The Stasi were sent out to educate the masses as they lectured that natural seeds not genetically modified under government oversight were dangerous and could lead to many other illnesses and birth defects. As they made their way community by community, a good many men and women who had previously lived free outside the government mandates, asking and wanting for nothing from the Leviathan, were arrested and vaccinated against their will, or they died in their attempts to escape the Stasi. And now free-born Americans were saddened and struck another hard mental and spiritual blow at the loss of so many of their brothers and sisters so needlessly, and only because they existed. This anger that coursed through their ranks, wherever they were found, was unlike anything the country had seen in centuries. White, hot anger that was sure to wreak vengeance upon any government agents, wherever they could be found. But in the end, the Stasi could not arrest or vaccinate all the renegades and rebels spread out throughout the land, since they had now taken to hiding among the new normal masses, using fake COVID certificates. And as the word spread that the new resistance was growing and effective, these rebels connected with others who were also unvaccinated and in hiding from the Stasi, who had missed locating and identifying them over the past decade. And Maggie? Maggie was one of them. From the first day of her birth, on September 15th, 2006, literally born in a barn in Irishtown, Tennessee, she had never been vaccinated. And now that organic farming was illegal, she was forced to move to a small village just up from her longtime home. And now she was just getting by, doing whatever work she could find available, along with teaching art classes for several of the local middle school-aged children. An extremely talented artist, much reminiscent of the style of Cindy Press, who was executed as an enemy of the state. She had learned to draw and paint from her earliest years, and she could sing in divine fashion as well, with a voice like an angel. But as soon as it became apparent that the turning brought an evil wind with it, danger and death, Granddad Grover had seen to it that Maggie was provided with a fake COVID vaccine certificate that was virtually undetectable from the real deal. The only thing that could expose her was a bio test that could determine if anyone has received their prescribed jab, but she was careful to avoid any situation that would place her in any position as this. So unwelcome. It was the sort of position that had cost her parents their own lives and left young Maggie to the care of her granddad, who loved her more than life itself. And for the next 5 years, Maggie and hundreds of others managed to survive and avoid any close calls with government agents. But it was far from a desirable way to live, and hard as all hell on many days. She'd never had it so hard in her own community, where she and her kind had lived freely by their own rules. And now, as others were forced to hide and wear masks in order to go undetected and basically follow the diktats of Chairman Joe and the Ministry of State Security, Maggie flitted in and out of the shadows, avoided contact with anyone she did not know, having already received thousands of dollars in fines and, more recently, threats of imprisonment, which implied almost certain death. Maggie wondered what was the point, if they all weren't to be free anyway. And as she waited for her granddad, Grover, who promised he'd return for her after he'd been forced to flee Stasi security forces in a pitched battle one late night. But you see, Maggie had promised her parents, those who had died in a fierce firefight with state security soldiers, that she would always remain faithful to the principles, the virtue, the honor that they had instilled within her, those same principles and virtues that America herself had been founded upon. And so there would be no compromise for Maggie. She resisted and refused to comply, since she knew deep within her heart of hearts that this current tyranny could not go on forever without something breaking hard like an explosion all across their society. And she hoped that she and her people would one day be free again. But call it fate. Call it pure, damn bad luck. But the Stasi finally snagged Maggie in one of their sporadic dragnets early one morning, in something she recognizes her own stupid mistake. You see, she was out to retrieve one of the many survival packages that Granddad had been leaving for her, near an old oak tree that had long marked as an agreed point for meetings and drops of letters and supplies and such. And the patrol had approached her and asked to see her COVID vaccine certificate, demanding CV, ma'am. And as she slowly reached inside the inside pocket of her new jacket, she automatically realized her CV certificate was at home in the pocket of her old jacket. Well, appearing anywhere in public without one CV was strictly illegal, and so they scanned her arm only to find no sign of vaccination. They couldn't believe what they were seeing, so they administered the test again and once more, and they found no trace of antibodies in her system. And unable to explain it away or produce a valid CV, and with a certificate at her home discovered to be a counterfeit, Maggie was arrested and unceremoniously prodded along to a cell in Lubyanska Psychiatric Hospital, the federal prison operated by the Ministry of Truth. And she was resolved to hold herself erect as the wind blew through her auburn hair and the morning light glinted off her steely blue eyes that flashed anger with each strike of a rifle butt that hit her shoulders. Later, in one of Lubyanska's infamous interrogation rooms, Maggie sat face to face with Captain Alex Ocasio-Guevara, chief of the vaccine enforcement unit, as he suggested to her that there's an easy path out of all this, dear Maggie. Just take the jab and you'll be free. But Granddad's ire raised up within her, as did some of his salty language, which came in handy at this moment, and Maggie harshly retorted, "Like hell, that'll be a damn day. Never, you can go yourself, because you'll have to kill me first." Alex Ocasio-Guevara closed his eyes, placed his hands to his lips as though praying, and smiled a wicked smile. And as he thought to himself, it certainly was an option, and legal, too, with the recent change to the Constitution. But it was not his preferred option, because he needed Maggie to freely choose the vaccine to keep her from becoming a martyr and an inspiration to a growing rank of rebels. And neither did he need anyone to start thinking the vaccine really was sinister in any way. He was one of the few of his ilk who actually believed that winning by persuasion was better than resorting to force. And he was also a true believer in his own righteousness. But for the life of him, he failed to be able to understand her stubborn refusal, her firm refusal to comply, especially since he had voluntarily taken the vaccine himself, as he told her. Hadn't all the other members of the upper classes voluntarily taken it too? Well, hadn't they? He had taken it because he believed in law and order, but also and primarily he believed in the vaccine. You know, Captain Guevara was essentially as honorable a man as one could find in the ranks of these cancel culture Marxists. And he truly believed that sooner rather than later, he would convince her of the rightness of doing as he asked. And he felt certain he could make her see that her reluctance was a result of the trauma of her adolescent years, a harsh life by many people's standards, and the unfortunate experience of witnessing both her parents die in a hard-fought gun battle with the state boys. And while he had hit on part of the reasoning for Maggie, the clincher to never abandon her principles and her own righteous conscience came when she heard her dear loving parents named criminals and outlaws by real criminals and outlaws. Traitors to America who weren't worth a spit in their mouth. But she meant it. When she had thought to herself that she would die and go to hell first before she would comply and submit to any injection, she had slowly looked up. She awakened from her own thoughts and told Captain Guevara that she preferred prison to vaccination and refusal to compromise. And she even refused to see a state psychiatrist. And so Maggie sat in that prison for many months. It was her birthday, the day that the warden brought Maggie the book she had requested entitled Civil Disobedience by Henry David Thoreau. And as she glowed inside, she began to read. And there, inside just the first few pages, she found a handwritten note that suggested, ask for salt tonight when they deliver your dinner. And it was signed, a friend. It left her puzzled, since it had been years between the time she had any contact with anyone from her former life. So she decided to see what would happen, and indeed, she asked for extra salt that evening. Her jailer didn't flinch or give the slightest hint of recognition or suspicion, and she brought Maggie a small white salt shaker that appeared to be a normal salt shaker in every way, but upon opening it and poking about a bit, she soon found a small key and a note inside, covered in the salt. And the note explained that the key was to her cell door, and all the guards had either been bribed or drugged in order to secure her safe escape from the prison. And it continued with instructions and directions to a cabin in the surrounding woods where others like her, members of the resistance, would meet her. And about midnight, her adventurous journey began, and she made her successful departure from the place that she hated, hiding her face and her hair in a cloth wrap that had been her grandma's headscarf. Several hours later, and many good miles covered, even though she walked every step of the way, the sun was rising in the eastern sky when she reached the destination, knocking on the door in anticipation. No one answered, and she finally just turned the handle and walked on in, and quite cautiously so as not to disturb the silence. And then she saw him, a man in an armchair with his back to her, as he promptly exclaimed, "So you're finally here," in a voice that she seemed to recognize. She was hoping it was an old patriot from her community, but turning to face her, it was none other than Captain Alex Ocasio Guevara. Of course, it had been a trap. Part of her knew it would, but she had to play out the hand that God had shown her and damn the consequences, for at least now she knew beyond all doubt that her adversaries had wanted her to raise her hopes, only to dash them as a cruel form of mental torture in their own elaborate game of cat and mouse, and now they would accuse her of sedition for attempting to join the resistance and the rebels, who were now fighting guerrilla campaigns in nearly every town in the country. Oh, Maggie could easily be tried in a military court and sentenced to death. And in a matter of days, she was condemned to death by firing squad. And with each new rising sun, Maggie was offered a full pardon in exchange for her acquiescing to take the COVID vaccine on national television to be broadcast on every major station. And with each new setting sun, she refused. If she was to die, Maggie intended to die on her own terms. She would rather die like the early Christian martyrs or St. Joan d'Arc, thrown to the lions or burned at the stake, than to submit to the tyrants who had taken everything from her in life, except her own free will and her righteous conscience. But try as they might, there was no convincing Maggie to receive the jab. And they knew this was fast turning into a major fiasco, since there was no way she could leave Lubyanska without either taking the vaccine or being executed. And at this point, with the rebel cause gaining momentum, they could not withstand Maggie being turned into a hero for the freeborn Americans. Maggie, who at the age of 32 had spent over half her life by this time either resisting or actively fighting against tyranny imposed upon freeborn Americans by those who had been born here only to betray the country of their birth that had given them so much. Those mentally deficient, spiritually void, subhuman communists, traitors one and all. And so a decision came down from no one less than Chairman Joe himself. But Maggie would be executed on Christmas Day in secret. And the official report would note that having never been vaccinated, she was not immune from COVID-19 and contracted it and subsequently died from its effects. Christmas arrived fast, faster than Maggie wanted, and she had worked and prayed for a new opening and a good, viable escape plan to no avail, and so she was now preparing to meet her appointed time with the Grim Reaper, thinking of a song Granddad used to sing about being offered one last sup from the potter's cup when the man comes around, and the verses that Granddad would recite from Luke 22:18-20. For I say unto you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God shall come. And he took bread, and gave thanks, and brake it, and gave unto them, saying that this is my body, which is given to you. This do in remembrance of me. Likewise also the cup, after supper, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood, which is shed for you. Well, the sun was just coming up over the horizon as the Stasi snipers escorted Maggie into the prison courtyard to be shot. And she had refused all offers to allow her to announce her regret publicly, and she'd even refused a last meal. And she also refused the blindfold, not wanting anything covering her face on this fateful morning, to later be mischaracterized by state media and the propagandists of the Ministry of Truth as a face mask voluntarily donned in a final act of contrition to the state. And so Maggie's steely blue eyes pierced into the eyes of each of her executioners just before they raised their rifles. She was not afraid, because she knew she had long ago found her own salvation through Jesus Christ, her Lord and Savior. Her hair flowed in the wind, and she smiled at the soldiers with a confident smile that said, you may kill my body, but you will never touch my soul. And as she awaited the arrival of the bullets that would send her on to her maker, she remembered a song that her own mother used to sing in the years before she died. In a flash of her mind's eye, before the orders came to make ready to aim and to fire, there came the thunderous roar of two helicopters bearing the state security emblem with guns ablazing and cutting the executioners in half. A second later, a massive hole is blown into the side of the wall, and men on horseback charged on, firing every firearm imaginable as the troop ran from quarters to meet the attack. And it was Granddad Grover, sitting tall on Old Smokey with his Browning automatic rifle, cutting men down left and right as he bore down upon her, stopping just long enough to help her up behind him, as the entire group simultaneously turned and showed them their horses' rumps on the way out, with answering bullets whizzing past them and into them. And Maggie squeezed her Granddad tight as they rode into the woods, telling him how much she loved him and how she feared she would never see him again this side of heaven. And the band of free-born Americans, rebels in the best sense of the word, drove on till nightfall, the breaching of the perimeters of a clearing where other men and women had fires going and food cooking. What a sight it was for men who had just so narrowly escaped death. Granddad pulled Smokey to a halt and slid to the ground behind Maggie after she dismounted, pulling a sheaf of papers from his shirt. It said, Maggie, my dear little sweet Maggie, you rest for an hour here, and then you must follow this map to the last destination marked. I'll meet you there in Levesey. But first, there is much I have left to finish here. Nagi responded, "Oh, Granddad, I thought I'd never see you again." And grabbing him and squeezing him tight to her, finding it hard to believe that he was still going so strong at 80 years of age. She released him only to discover her hand was covered in blood and her granddad had been shot. But he wasn't complaining. Oh, no, you never hear Grover Judea Smith utter the first word of complaint, even if he was dying. And he gently smiled and said, "Don't you worry, Nun, sweetie. Your old granddad ain't done by a long shot. No, siree. Not by a long shot." "Say, would you sing your mama's song for me?" he asked. "Before you have to be on your way. You know the one." And with a voice that could summon angels to earth, Maggie sang the song. Michael, are you there? Let's play it now. I'll come back. All right.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountain side. The summer's gone and all the roses falling. It's you, it's you.
Yep, I thought it was here. Sorry about that. Interesting piece of music you were choosing there, because it's actually a real part of that that entire piece. I thank you for those of you who chose to spend this evening program with me. Not one that I was planning on doing. And quite a story behind how it all came together. Lord willing, I'll see you all on Monday. Be blessed on this holiday weekend. And it is a true holy day weekend. God bless you all and good night.
I'm with you once more under the stars and down by the shore an orchestra's playing and even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin. Again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart, and there we are, swearing to love forever, and promising never, never to divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the beginning. When they begin the beginning.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.